For all the angst about home ownership in this country and the political rhetoric about its importance, the Liberal Party, it could be argued, is flying in the face of its own party's heritage by not prioritising an urgent fix. That's the view of political historian Judith Brett, most famous, of course, for her landmark book, Robert Menzies' Forgotten People. In the latest edition of the monthly magazine, Professor Brett reminds us that Menzies was very conscious of the human need for home ownership, and he wove it as a central symbol into his whole political philosophy. And yet, in a year when investor home loans now surpass those to homeowners in Australia, the Liberal Party, she says, seems to have forgotten how to ensure policies that support widespread home ownership, the core of Menzies' famed Forgotten People speech, ironically celebrating the 75th anniversary of its delivery earlier this year. Judith Brett is an emeritus professor at La Trobe University, and I welcome her now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just take us back, if you would, to the Forgotten People speech, which your book drew its title from. It was, in fact, a radio broadcast, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a radio broadcast made in May 1942. Menzies was on the backbench. He'd been Prime Minister when war broke out. He'd lost the confidence of his party. He'd gone to the backbench soon after John Curtin became Prime Minister. So Menzies was on the backbench. He decided to stay in Parliament rather than, say, going back to the bar, where he would have had a very illustrious legal career. And he was making a series of radio broadcasts that were, in a sense, a sort of taking stock of his political values and why he was going to stay the course in politics.
And what did it say broadly, if you could summarise it?
Well, the Forgotten People speech, the Forgotten People was a transformation of an older idea of the forgotten class, which was sometimes used to talk about the middle class. And Menzies was saying, well, the sort of people I'm in Parliament to represent are the middle class, the shopkeepers, professionals, the small business owners, the people who are not very rich, but also the people who were not represented in politics by the Labor Party and the union movement. They're the people that were the base, if you like, of the Liberal Party. And he was then singing their virtues, saying they're the backbone of the nation. They have the virtues that we need if we're going to have a stable, functioning democracy. And one of the keys to these virtues was their stability of their location in the home. And he went through the advantages of the home material, the home spiritual, the home emotional, if you like, as the basis for solid family life and as the basis for citizenship. That these were the people in Liberal Party rhetoric who, you know, kept our democracy going. They had a stake in the country.
And that was the whole business about these are the sorts of people who consider their greatest accolade in life, their greatest achievement in life is the raising of their children. So it was a very values-laden thing, wasn't it?
Yes, and in saying something like, you know, the values of their children, of course, many people in the working class also thought that their greatest contribution to the nation was the raising of their children. So although it's quite a sort of transitional speech in many ways, or an unstable speech, it's got a lot of markers of class privilege, because at that time, it's only if you had a good middle class job that you got a salary and had any chance of getting a bank loan. But it's also got things like the values people place on their children and on their home life, which, of course, are widely shared across all Australians.
This whole notion of home ownership and this transition that it brought you to the middle class is just so interesting. And this is how he described having your own home, and I quote him now, which is ours, to which we can withdraw, in which we can be among friends, into which no stranger may come against our will. So this is a very powerful idiom and set of symbols, isn't it?
Yes, and I would add to that, and from which you cannot be evicted by a landlord. You know, at the time he gave that speech, about 50% of people were living in rented accommodation. And Menzies in the 1950s, if you like, oversaw and encouraged a transformation of our system of tenure, of home tenure, whereby that shifted to upwards of 70% of people became homeowners. Whereas now things are going the other way. So a friend of one of my daughters has a little boy, and, you know, they live in rental accommodation and the landlords decide they want to realise the equity and they have to move or whatever. And he said, you know, Mummy, when will we have our forever home? You know, and it's that sense of a home where that you decide when you're going to move. You know, you decide if you want to sell. So I think that there's a sort of security that it provides a basis for many other decisions in one's life that Menzies was tapping into there.
Now, I'm going to come back to that, but you relate this to yourself in your essay.
Yes. Well, I'm the generation where homes were pretty cheap. And we've stayed in that house. And the house is almost like a person in my life. It provides, I mean, I think houses provide shelter and all sorts of benefits, but they provide a level of sort of emotional and psychological shelter. I feel as if the house contains my life. And I wrote in the monthly, you know, that I had a recurring anxiety dream that somehow we'd sold the house and I couldn't quite work out why we'd sold it. I felt like I'd betrayed a friend in selling the house.
And alongside that delightfully candid attachment that you described, there's a feeling you suggest of almost guilt that younger generations can't have what you have.
Oh, I do feel that. A young man came to the house. He was delivering a book for me and he had to come inside and he said, oh, what a lovely house. Now, this is a weatherboard house that was a working, you know, it was we bought it off a plumber. You know, we've fixed it up a bit and things, but, you know, it's not a super flash house. But for a young man of 27, it is a super flash house and he was really wistful and he said, I guess I'm going to have to move to the country if I want a house. And I felt ashamed that people who were like my husband and I were when we were in our late 20s can't have the sort of choices that we had to be able to buy a relatively modest house where we could raise our children and have a degree of security. Like the suburb that I live in, like I'm experienced many people have.
You know, it's an inner city Melbourne suburb.
It's an inner north. It wasn't the inner city when we went there, actually. It was sort of the outer inner city, but it's now inner city. The houses are in the millions of dollars.
Judith Brett's my guest, a political historian and author. Now, Menzies, of course, had quite a policy rationale, didn't he? This is what you point out, that this was quite a deep strategy about, if I read you correctly, the role of capital over labour. He was always very, very circumspect about big money. And you say that he really gave this full vent in the way he thought this through.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also we have to remember that there's just been a depression and a war. So people have sacrificed a lot of their private aspirations and life and put their life plans on hold. People put marriages on hold, having children on hold during the war. So there was a sense, I think, bipartisan sense, that people deserved to be rewarded in some ways for those sacrifices. And home ownership was something the people who'd been through the war, the young people who'd been through the war, leapt at. So there was already in place a system of war service homes from after the First World War. And so returned servicemen flocked into that. And Menzies also put in place some ways of funneling money into building societies so that money could be made available to other young people for their homes.
So what is it that you clearly believe that Robert Menzies would be rolling in his grave at the sorts of policies that the current Liberal Party, his creation, have adopted. What in particular?
Well, I think it's the fact that homes have become property and become seen as investments. And it's the fact that the Liberal Party won't move on negative gearing, I feel, is a sign that they're putting the interests of investors ahead of the interests of homeowners. I don't think Menzies would ever have done that. He saw the home as a place for people to own and raise their families. He didn't see it primarily as a vehicle for investment and getting ahead in the way Scott Morrison would put it.
I mean, clearly there would be people listening to say, okay, has she taken account of the fact that Europeans raise their children in rental accommodation a lot of the time? And also Australia's become a desirable place. Part of the problem, quotes, is that we've become such a destination point for people.
Well, on the point about the European system, they've got very different tenure laws. If we're going to become a nation in which large numbers of people rent, renters have to have much, much greater security of tenure than they've now got. And that is similarly in tension with the property investors who are actually not buying property at the moment because they want to be able to make an income from the rent. They're buying property because they're gambling on increase on capital gains. And so at some point they have to realise that capital gains, otherwise the whole venture was not worth anything. So that would be the point I'd make about Europe, that Europe's tenure laws are really, really different from ours. The second one about the destination, and you know, there's a lot of edginess around foreign investment, and I think that's actually legitimate. I mean, I think that the government's responsibility is actually to house the people who live here first. It's not to provide opportunities for investment for foreigners, or I don't think actually for a lot of the people who live here. I think that, you know, that they're sort of secondary goals, but the primary responsibility is to provide housing now. And it's not just for equity now, it's also for down the track when people head into old age without home ownership. I mean, you know, when we're talking about the period of the early 50s before the home ownership transformation started, when there's 50% of people living in rental accommodation, life expectancy was a lot less. Many of those people were dead by the time they were 60. So actually they weren't trying to live in rental accommodation on an old age pension. And we're facing, you know, 20, 30 years down the track, that sort of scenario. So I see it as also good sort of policy budget planning.
So why do you think they're not tackling this and seeing this as a clear and present danger?
Well, Geraldine, I think this is only one of the many things at the moment the government is not tackling. I feel as if for the last 10 years we've had from both parties a failure of government. We're not being governed at the moment, is my sense. And I think it's because, you know, that within the Liberal Party, for example, a constituency is built up around investment. I mean, look at the fuss they got from their base over the very minor changes to the superannuation laws. Very minor. I mean, a couple can have $4 million before they actually start paying the 15% tax on the earning above that, you know, and people start shrieking. So we require a little bit of political courage, and which we're not really seeing a lot of.
Yes. Now, look, before you go, can I just very quickly, your next book, due out very soon, I gather, is about Alfred Deakin.
That's right.
Has he been an interesting character to dissect?
Oh, yes. Alfred Deakin, he's a really fascinating man. He's complex. He's interesting. He's an urbane, sophisticated, intellectual man who was taken at the time, before the First World War, as a sort of the type of Australian that we would be proud of. He's not your sort of larrikin Aussie male, you know. But he's also, in terms of his approach to political leadership, I think he's got quite a lot to offer us at the moment, because he governed at a time of minority government. And so he had to manage not having a majority. And he was a person who was a great conciliator. He would always try to bring people together. And that's why I think he constructed a lot of the sort of centre of Australian politics, which...
So he's the sensible centre, you think?
Well, I think he tried to construct a sensible centre. And, I mean, that's what I guess many of us would like to see now.
We've done programs on this. Judith Brett, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Emeritus Professor Judith Brett, political scientist. She's the author of a forthcoming biography, The Enigmatic Mr. Deakin, due out in a couple of months, which sounds fabulous, I think. The revised edition of her book, Robert Menzies, Forgotten People, is published by MUP, and her article on home ownership that we've been talking about is available online.